Thank you very much, Steve. I'll start off by indicating that the experiment station in Ohio is the Ohio Agricultural Research and Development Center. And Craig started out his talk by saying a little bit about funding and the fact that their experiment station in Virginia and Extension were a combined line item. In Ohio, we also have line items, but the experiment station is a single line item, and Ohio State University Extension is also a single line item. So it's similar structure, but it functionally it's carried out a little bit differently. In Ohio, I would point out that agriculture is big business. It's the single largest economic sector in the state, and this is something that we constantly underscore in our discussion, both with the executive and legislative branches. One of the things that we have done is we've used external evaluations of our programs, and I'll talk a little bit about that as the presentation goes on. But the initial external evaluation that dates back to 2003 to 2004, we coined the term ag bioscience. And the reason we did that is it allowed us to talk about the fact that it's an entire value chain. It's not simply talking about commodities, and when we say agriculture, typically people infer that is a commodity base, but it allows us to talk about a whole range of activities in the state and what that means to the economy of the state. The other thing is that this is over 1 million jobs in the state of Ohio. And certainly, as we talk about economics and we talk about job creation, those are the two resonating themes as we talk certainly with the legislature in the state of Ohio. This is shows a picture of Ohio. One of the differences from Virginia is that in the case of Ohio, all of our faculty are at one of two locations. They're either on the main campus in Columbus or they're at the Worcester campus up in Worcester. And so, let's see if I can. So this is the Worcester campus right here. I'll show a picture in a moment. But all of our faculty are at these two locations. So all of the other locations that are shown have staff located at those locations, but not faculty. And faculty will go out from Columbus or Worcester to do their respective research. The other thing is that if you look at the state, and I'm having a little trouble with the room for the mouse, but if you go about like this, to the west of that line, the state is has been glaciated, and so most of the stations that you see is northwest and western. Those are where we have agronomic and vegetable work ongoing. And as you look at the eastern part of the state, where you see eastern Jackson, these are tend to be rolling hill areas, and they tend to be more focused on the animal agriculture in the state. So this shows you the Worcester campus. We have about 2,000 acres in this location. The experiment station actually operates the campus at this location. We're responsible for all the infrastructure as well as the research at this location. So our infrastructure is mostly here, but we have about 2,000 acres in total. We'll talk a little bit about this area that's the Arboretum. And this is a dairy operation, but this whole area right out in here is becoming kind of our bioenergy corridor for the campus. This location right down in here is the Agricultural Technical Institute. It's primarily a two-year degree granting entity, about 750 students at that location. We're finding more and more that students are transferring down to the main campus for a continuation of a four-year degree, and we have about 100 students a year that are transferring. And with the over-enrollment on the main campus, this actually becomes pretty important in terms of access to the university by a number of the kids that would like to be in the college. This is the Columbus campus. I'm just showing a portion of the campus because the ag cluster tends to be primarily in this region. In addition to agriculture, we have a vet school, we have a medical school, which gives us a great infrastructure across disciplines. And unfortunately, Bruce McFerrin was not here today. I was going to point to him that we have our Saturday retreats here, and that we're in fact having a retreat in Happy Valley this coming Saturday. I hope he's a good host for us. Now, one of the things that we do at our outline research stations, this is what we call a one-pager. We talk with the legislature, when we talk with people that are interested in what we do at our various locations, we found that if you go more than a page, and when we say one pager, it's front and back, but if we go more than a page, it doesn't get read. And so at each of those locations that I showed you around the state, we've got a one pager that highlights what research is going on, what the focus of that station is. We've also created an advisory group at each one of these locations, and as we get in these tight budgetary times, it's absolutely critical that you have people that are engaged with what you're doing there. They need to know what the station's doing, and they need to step up and be advocates for what you're doing. Quite frankly, people outside the system oftentimes have more impact in terms of what they say than people inside the system. They know we're going to advocate, they know we're going to talk about programs, but when somebody outside the system says, this is what it means to me and this is why I'm successful, it makes a great deal of difference. The other thing that we've started to do is to link our outline locations electronically back to the main campus. So what you see in this particular case is a system that we've set up at one of our western stations. This happens to be a microscope, and they're looking. This is Sally Miller in our plant pathology department, and so she's showing a leaf under here, but this is linked so that photographically the image goes back to a central laboratory back on the main campus where we can do the diagnostics without physically having to go out to that location. And we think within the next 5 or 6 years we'll have each of our stations linked up in this manner. We've got 3 stations where we're experimenting with this technology right now. And this obviously is me, but this individual right here is a member of the state legislature. And so when we bring technology like that out in this individual's district, and we can talk about, quote, high technology from his perspective, this carries a lot of weight. We were later having a discussion, and he spoke up and said he wished everybody in the legislature could see this, and quite frankly, he was going to make it an issue back in the legislature. So that kind of advocacy in these kinds of times is really an important process. Now, one of the things that I thought I would do is just quickly share 3 slides that talk about how we do business. And the reality is that we don't do business the way we did 10 years ago. Probably 10 years from now, it'll even be different than it is now. But where we have dollars that do not go into infrastructure, either of departments or the experiment station, by and large, what we try to do is have those dollars that we have left available on a competitive basis. And the reason for that is they don't get locked into any one discipline or one area. They tend to float, and they float where the priorities are. It also allows us to do matching of resources with private entities in the state. So one of the things that we've set up is an internal competitive research program we call SEEDS. This is about 15 years old now, but it's grown considerably. It started pretty small, and it's grown. These are different points that we make that come out of this program. So again, when we're talking with the legislature, what we're talking about is leveraging state funds. So for example, we can indicate that we've been able to work with over 150 companies within the state of Ohio through this program. We've been able to return $5 on every state dollar that we've invested in these programs. These are real selling points to decision makers. Not only that, but it really, I think, has helped drive the research process in terms of getting our faculty involved in understanding that these are and truly are seed funds, so that they're meant to be leveraged by them being more competitive for extramural funds. and we've more than tripled our grant awards in the last decade. The other thing that we've done, and this again dates back to that extramural study that we did back in 2003-2004, is that we set up what we called Ag Bioscience Centers of Innovation. We took areas we had some strength in that we knew we had some innovation coming out of. The idea of these centers was to move inventions from the laboratory out into the private sector. And there's we think when we have a discovery, oftentimes that it's ready for the private industry to pick up. The reality is when you get into discussions, there's usually, they might like the discovery, they may see a need, but there's usually a couple of steps in between that to put it in a form that they can utilize it. So these are six areas where we felt like we could make an impact over time. And I'll show you a little bit of the results that have come out of that. The other thing is that 15 years ago, we would have also argued that we do research and we make discoveries. But after all, it's somebody else's responsibility to market those and to develop those. We do have an Office of Technology Licensing at the university, but as it is with most universities, it's oversubscribed. There's not a lot of people in that office. So we put together also a program we call ATEC. And what this is really having somebody that's a link with the technology licensing office that works with our faculty, knows what that portfolio is, and is constantly moving things that have some opportunity to have patenting or licensing opportunities to make sure that that stream is continued. We also have in there a person that spends a lot of time marketing these things. They actually go out and talk with industry, get some alignment with what the faculty's doing, what these projects are. That's led to additional research grants with industry. It's also led to some direct licensing of some of the technology. So that's a different way of doing business, but quite frankly, I think it's something that we'll see more and more in the future. The other thing that we've done in the last year is that we went back and redid the external evaluation process, and we've used Battelle for this process. And so this was kind of a five-year update, and what we came out of this with was were three signature areas. Now, it was very timely for our college because about the same time Ohio State was also saying through the provost that they wanted a strategic plan from each one of the colleges. It turns out that these focus areas that we have here became also the focus areas of the college more broadly. So what I'm going to do is just briefly under each one of these kind of give you an idea of some of the things that we're doing, but it gives us a way of telling the faculty here's where investments are going to be. When you make a request, when you put in for a SEEDS grant, you need to tell us how it's going to really benefit one of these areas, because that in essence allows our vice president to go back to the provost and say here's where we're making investments and here's the difference that it's made. One of the things that I mentioned earlier was that we do have a medical school on the campus, and one of the things that we can do is some people have already talked about healthy compounds. What this refers to is the lycopene concentration in tomatoes. We have a basic genetics program in this area that has to do with fruit development. But some of the genetics and understanding of the gene constructs has allowed us to target that in our breeding program. It turns out that the lycopene concentration is directly related to color of the product. The more intense the color, the more competitive our processors can be. So they like this, but it also then feeds back into the clinical trials that we're doing with the medical school because it has to do with lycopene concentration, and some of that has to do with bioavailability. The back end of this process will be that there will be products that come out of this in treatments of selected cancers. Also, one of the areas that we've been looking at, there's a requirement for eggs to be salmonella free by 2010. And one of the things, this came out of our Ag Bioscience Innovation Center, is ozone and pressure treatment of eggs. So this essentially, we've been able to show that this will eliminate salmonella not only on the surface but down in the pores of the eggs. And the other thing is that we've also been reinvesting in facilities. Our old, what we would call feed mill, was built in 1965. Quite frankly, we needed that updated. But as we were updating that, we built in some other components. So you can see that it's now called the Feedstock Processing Research Facility, because we also have the ability in here to grind soybeans, for example. So if we're looking at segregating lines, we're interested in oil streams, protein streams, and what those might mean in terms of some bioproducts that we would be interested in. So we've changed somewhat the focus of that. The area of growth in the last 5 years has highly been in the bioenergy, bio-based products. We're at the eastern end of the Corn Belt, and so we've really worked pretty hard on the bioproducts end of things. This represents a program where we've looked at a dandelion that's from Eastern Asia, and this one has a fairly high latex concentration in it. And we're looking at this as being a domestic supply of rubber. All natural rubber in this country is imported currently. And the state started a program about 5 years ago called Third Frontier, where they were going to make investments in the future where the state was going. This is one of the projects that they funded, and we have some of the tire industries in the state that are interested in this. We started with in the plants that you just plant out and check 1 to 2% latex, and through plant selection, domestication process, we're up to over 20% latex in those plants currently. So we think this has some real implications for our industry. I mentioned the fact that we're looking at the bioproducts end of things. We also have a program called Ohio Bioproducts Innovation Center. And the important part of this is that the second largest industry in our state is the polymer industry. Chemicals, plastics, advanced materials. There's over 2,800 small companies in the state of Ohio. Well, the point of the discussion that's going on is that that industry and agriculture realize they're really joined at the hip, and they're joined at the hip because of carbon. All of the things that the polymer industry wants to build, they're going to build out of carbon. And the question is, where are they going to get that carbon? And so we're finding that that actually is causing a very dynamic dialogue that has not gone unnoticed, both in the legislature and in the governor's office. Another thing that we're trying to do is really look at the way we do business. In this particular case, you'll see the name at the bottom of that list, Schmack Bioenergy. This is one of our facilities. They're a German company, but they wanted an R&D laboratory. We've actually placed them in one of our facilities. This is with our ag engineering group, and they're co-located. This right now has been a very successful experiment for us. They've actually been funding some of our research, and at the same time, we're very much involved with understanding what some of the standardization issues are that that industry needs. I'm sure there will be pluses and minuses with some of that as we go along. Also in that bioenergy area, we've invested pretty heavily in the anaerobic digester systems, primarily as a distributed system. And we've tied that into really trying to understand on a distributed basis what forms of energy we can produce. So we've linked that in with solid oxide fuel cells. We think for our rural communities, this has a lot of implications in terms of being able to produce on-farm energy and be self-sustaining. The last area, very quickly, environmental quality and sustainability. I mentioned the Secrest Arboretum. Again, this is the public-private venture. From our standpoint, on a public standpoint, it's a research entity. We've had a lot of interest in beautification programs and in infrastructure, You'll see the pathways, that's all been through privately raised money, and we see a great increase in the use of the Arboretum, and we're seeing what we do in the Arboretum increase. From our standpoint, it continues to be a research Arboretum, but it's having a much greater impact than it did historically. We're also working with a number of things that have to do with invasive species. Ash tree is one of the four major wood species in the state. It's $1 billion value of wood in the state. Within 10 years, the native ash tree will not be present in the state due to the emerald ash borer. And so we have a very active program going on in this case, not only in terms of looking for resistance and trying to bring resistant species back in for ash, but also trying to understand when these ash trees are gone, what's the non-target effect as it's removed from the forest. We have a lot of invasive species, plant species, that are moving into that space that will have a big impact as well. And also looking more broadly at local food networks, these have as much of an implication in our inner cities as they do in our rural communities. But one of the interesting parts of looking at this is that it's really a social networking system. And so the person with his arms folded is Casey Hoy. He's a Kellogg professor at Ohio State. But what he's doing is using the social networking like Facebook to keep a very broad, diverse group of entities communicating over what can be done in the kinds of community gardening type ventures that you see. A very exciting use of new technology that I think we're just scratching the surface with, and it enables us to partner with groups that historically we've never had very good inroads with. So I'll just finish with this slide. I showed it earlier, and you see the component parts there, but you'll notice over here it says BioHow Research Park. We have about 90 acres of land in this area. And that's going to be developed, again, as a public-private enterprise. It'll be a research park. It's agreed upon that it'll be in alignment with the kinds of research that we have going on in the campus. We think it can be leveraged back and forth, but it'll have a lot of impact in terms of, we think, the investment in the programs that we have as we move forward. The other thing is, from a regional standpoint, it links us more closely with the Northeast region of Ohio, in this particular case, than any other thing that we've probably done in the last 20 years. And the reality is, as we look at what we're doing, it's not only dollars in terms of allocations to run our programs, but it's how people view us and how they consider us as a resource that will determine our viability as we move forward in the future. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
You mentioned you have advisory committees for every research station.
Right.
And I just wonder, what's your experience, what's the success in kind of keeping them active? I know in our state we've had them, they have mixed results, and that tend to kind of decline and become inactive. There's no real mission or goal set that they feel, you know, that they have a part in saving the station.
Well, I think it's like any other thing you invest in. It's a constant work, and even if we just simply told the managers to do it and we did not invest some of our own time and energy into that, I think the same thing would happen. Quite frankly, with the tight budgets, with all the dynamics that I talked about going on, right now it's pretty easy to get them engaged. But I think the trick will be, over time, continuing to keep them engaged. But there have been things that we've done that they can see that they had a role in. As we talk with local legislators and we have them come to field days and stuff, these people feel like they're spokespersons. So we try to keep them actively engaged. And as long as we do that, I think we'll be okay. The other issue that we run into a little bit is some of our managers feel a little bit threatened because they're a little worried that these groups are going to tell them how to run their business. And, my point on that is if that happens, it's because they're not actively engaged in telling them the purpose of the station there and really actively utilizing it. So they're searching for a mission. And I think it'll be a dynamic process. We haven't had groups opting out at this point, but I could see that, you know, being a case, particularly if we have a manager that's not very active.
Have any form partnerships where they've actually helped to secure resources for our station?
Indirectly. I mean, we have not had a group like that do a fundraiser or donate dollars directly. What they are advocates both for the state budget and also advocates sometimes with large companies that may be doing business in the area. So they, from a communication point, they add quite a bit. And the question was asked earlier of Craig, we've also started an umbrella endowment fund for all these outlying stations. It's by any standards to have any impact, it's pretty small right now, but we have the ability to earmark those within that larger umbrella for any particular location. So if somebody did make a, you know, if they wanted to name a location or something like that, we could keep that money targeted. But my feeling is if we want to sit back and wait for the state to invest, and that's our view on how we're going to be successful, I think we're probably doomed to failure. We've got to look at other ways of generating resources. All of our outlying research stations, we've told them that by and large, we'll cover salaries of personnel. Now, if they want to grow numbers right now in this kind of budget, we've got to talk about that differently. But projects, basically, for the infrastructure, they have a base operating, but quite frankly, they have to do what we call cost recovery to make those systems work. We've set up accounts, for example, if we have the animal facilities, the sale of those animals, the dollars stay with the accounts there, but they have to actively manage those in terms of running those operations. We're getting better at being entrepreneurial in that way, but I'll tell you, it's hard to break several decades of doing it one way and getting people to think entrepreneurial when the historical way of doing business was go to the director and convincing that he needed to get more money. Well, you know, I've gotten pretty good at showing lint in my pocket, and I've made it pretty clear I want them at the table doing business with us if we're going to do things.
We probably better go to the next speaker. We can have time for more questions and dialogue important at the end. So.
Let's give Steve a round of applause.